time you need auto parts and accessories, trust the parts professionals at the 42 Birmingham area O'Reilly Auto Parts stores. Our professional parts people know what it takes to get the job done right. Professionals have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for decades. Now you can too. Professional parts people. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I am, of course, Angela Butler. Today's guest is Reverend Dr. Stevens. Dr. Stevens' wife, Miss Dorothy Stevens, is not up to talking, so we're just going to have Dr. Stevens on the show. So how are you doing, Dr. Stevens?
I'm fine, Angela. Doing very well. How about you?
I'm doing good, doing good. It's good to have you on the show.
Oh, it's good to be here, and I thank you for inviting us.
You're more than welcome. You are more than welcome. So you're on Show Talk with Angela Butler, Dr. Steve, that you've agreed to come on and try to give some relationship and marriage advice to this generation of people, including myself. So so I just hope the show is blessed. That's all. And
amen.
Yes. All right, everyone. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Mr. Stevens. He is a retired teacher. He's from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He and his wife both are retired. When he retired, one of the things he's taught was the mentally gifted program. His wife, like I said, is also a retired teacher. She co-founded with her husband, Miss Dorothy Stevens, the Christ Center of God Congregation, and the Sound Marriages Ministry. So she's also a graduate with a BA, and they're married. They've been married 53 years. Just wanted to make that a point. So, all right. So I guess one of the first questions would be, why is the divorce rate so high?
Okay, I think there are many reasons why, but I think that society has relaxed a lot of the standards and a lot of the mores of marriage, and people jump in to marriage for many reasons, but sometimes not the right reason. They get anxious, they think it's something to do, and don't realize that it's a lot of hard work. You're going to have a successful marriage, you're going to have to put in for the work that's involved. I think a lot of the reason is that people get married and they're not really prepared for marriage. They're prepared biologically and some of the other things, but they're not really prepared knowing some of the things that they're going to have to face during the time that they're married. And so they get in and they're unprepared, and so something comes along and causes them to want to mess up and bail out of the relationship. We were just talking about a marriage that we're familiar with where the people had a potentially good marriage, but they allowed some other things in there and then didn't get help and decided to bail, and it was a shame. So I think there are many factors, but a lot of it is based on unpreparedness.
Okay. All right. Unprepared. Okay. So, all right, that makes sense to me. So when a person decides that they have found the right mate and they want to marry, what is the advice you would give them?
Okay,
would you recommend counseling or just go with your heart?
Well, I think to partially answer your first question, why so many divorces and breakups, is a lot of people just went with their heart and they didn't get the counseling, they didn't get the teaching that they needed. And so that's why it ended the marriage ended in such disruption. But yeah, I believe that if you're going to get married or you feel like you love somebody, I think then that's the time to prepare for the marriage. You need to find some folks who can sit you down, a pastor or a counselor or somebody who can sit you down and take you through the steps to find out if you are actually on a sound footing. If you just go with your heart, you can just feel a certain way one day and then completely different the next day. So going with your heart is what happens to a lot of people. I'm not saying that your heart isn't important, but I think that there's some other basic things that you need to base a marriage on.
Okay. What are the things that people need to base the marriage on? Could you spell it out?
Okay. Well, I'm going to try to spell it out in a few minutes, perhaps, when it really takes several weeks of instruction. But, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Wrong question.
No. That's okay. I think that one of the things we have to realize is that when you fall in love, you become a little colorblind in terms of some of the important issues. The heart takes over, and if it's allowed to take over, it will just kind of paint everything bright and shiny, and so you miss some of the questions on the test. And I think that by involving some outside sources or outside people, I think it will help you. I think I was saying yesterday to someone that we have a network, and we should utilize our network. Your network is, your family, your friend, your church members, your pastor. These are people who know you, know pretty much all about you. And when you bring the significant person into your life and say, oh, this is the person I'm getting ready to marry, then your network can kick in and say, have you considered this? Have you considered that? What about this? And they're more, they're able rather to help you with the test of who this person is and what the combination is like. But some people don't want anybody to interfere. They just want to listen. My heart is ticking, and I just get this on, get it on. But your network can help you see, is this a qualified relationship? They can see some things that you can't see because you're in love. I say you need to get your brain engaged before your heart takes over because we know so many instances of people falling in love with their heart, but you say, what were they thinking? That person was so ill-suited for that relationship, but you can't tell them anything because heart is in control.
Okay, so the heart is in control. And you suggest going around friends and family who know you well that can make suggestions about the person that you have decided to marry. Okay. But
That they have to overrule you, but at least they bring a wider breadth of investigation and understanding to that possible relationship. I don't know that they ought to tell you, you just can't marry this person for no good reason, and just eliminate the relationship. But at least they ought to be able to breathe some words of wisdom and some questions that maybe you wouldn't ask because the love bubble is happening. Yeah, use your network.
Use your network. Okay, that's good advice. So you're a marriage counselor, as I've already introduced you before. As a marriage counselor, you've been married 53 years. What is marriage like when you and your wife, Miss Dorothy Stevens, got married back then and now? How are things different? for marriages and relationships?
Okay, 53 years is so long, I may have forgotten what it was like back then. But yeah, you know, and network, as I mentioned before, network was strong. When you found somebody that you wanted to marry, you brought them to your family, and your family looked them over, and they asked questions, and they did investigations, you know. It was harder in those days for somebody to just show up, and you know, they want to know who was your family, who are your people, you know, and then you had to come up with some explanation or some information as to who your people were, and guess what? They were gonna check. You know, I mean, they make phone calls. You tell them, oh, they live in Timbuktu. And you think it was kind of an isolated thing. They say, yeah, Timbuktu, let me see. I know somebody. Yeah, where actually in Timbuktu? And what you say you have an aunt there? What's her telephone number? And they were going to check. They were going to check out the person. But today, people get away with, you know, anonymous information and nebulous backgrounds, and nobody checks, you know, and you find out that after your heart has gotten engaged to the point where it is almost on a no-stop run, you know, then they find out, oh, you know, I should have investigated, but it's too late, you know, disaster's on the tracks.
Okay. What are red flags to look for that people, men and women, should look for that tell them that they have an unsuitable mate? The foreman.
Okay, I got it. I alluded to the fact you need to know if the person is authentic. Where do they come from? What are their backgrounds? Who do they know? Who knows them? And find out who and what you know they are from. And yeah, my wife signaled to me just now to say find out the company that they've been keeping. Somebody knows somebody. We know a situation where this was a guy. He just showed up, and he was charming and everything, and he just swept the girl off of her feet, and no matter what anybody said, she was just falling head over heels in love with him. Well, it turned out they got married, and it turned out, and he was a fraud. You know, he came from nowhere, had no background. Well, everybody has a background, but he had no discernible background. So it turned out he was really a fake. And their marriage, after a couple of children, ended, and it just was devastating to the young lady. So you need to know where a person is coming from. You need to know where they've been. You need to ask some questions about their, you know, ability to provide or to cooperate. There's a lot of questions that need to be asked before you allow the heart to take over and sweep in the love bubble, and then it's over for most people. It's just over. I've heard people say, I don't care. I love that man, or I love that woman. I don't really care where they've been. I can change. You can't change people. You need to know where they're coming from, because the fake can move in so smoothly and so, you know, interestingly and charmingly. Some folks are just natural charmers. They charm the feathers off of a duck, you know. But you need more than charm to take you through a successful relationship.
Okay. That makes plenty of sense. Okay. Also, marriage, then and now, you talked about that already, but I'm going to expand it a little more. What about internet dating? Now, I had wrote an article for the magazine Urban Spice about the pros and cons of internet dating. You know, I had said the cons were, I wrote that the cons were might be somebody else's photo. They could get information from you and steal from your bank accounts or credit union accounts or savings, checking, you know, things like that. And people can do that through the internet. They may take your identity, your name. But those were the cons. The pros were that you could find a really good man or woman. You just had to have the same rules you have if you're in a bar or the church, which preferably the church. You get to know the person. But also, you be cautious. You know, you don't have to be paranoid, but be cautious, like you would even in a church or a bar or a club. And I also told people that they shouldn't talk about any small children, about any kids, because you never know about people. And I said, the other con is that they may not even be who they say they are. They could be married to somebody else. I mean, you just really need to check into somebody. But my question for you is pretty much the same as what I was just talking about, internet dating. Now, I gave my point of view on it. Would you please give your point of view?
Okay, I think internet dating is, I think any dating now, you have to be cautious, as you said. I think you have to be aware. And the internet makes it even more a situation that you have to be even more cautious, because people can hide behind things and they can misrepresent themselves. And so I think that you have to be cautious. Yeah, the internet is great in terms of people meeting each other. Are in Florida, let's say, and you're on the internet and you meet somebody in Boston, and you have a interesting conversation, and it makes you curious as to who this person really is and what they think and so forth. Okay, so you go back and forth with the internet, but I would say be very careful that you don't give any any details that will compromise your identity or compromise your personal things. You mentioned bank accounts and stuff like that. I think you have to be very cautious about that. But, I mean, truth be told, if you just met somebody at the coffee shop or something, you still have to have that same caution. But I think that we need to tell people that you need to talk and you need to, kind of investigate each other if there's a romantic interest. However, you just can go so far and no further. I think the internet is great, but I think there has to be a face-to-face meeting eventually. Falling in love with somebody over cyberspace and then come to find out that the person is totally somebody who you would not, be attracted to. I think that there's always that caution. In fact, I've heard of people who use somebody else's identity or use somebody else's picture on their site to represent them, and they look totally different. That's unfair. And when that happens, you know that's a person that you can't trust fully. Be yourself and require that the person that you're interested in be themselves. Don't go for the okey-doke and then find out, well, my heart is already so far out there now that I can't go backwards. Have the person... you talk about things that are important. Talk about philosophical things. Talk about spiritual things. And those are the things that are going to hold us together or take us apart.
Okay. I know you are a pastor, a man of God. So what are some principles that people had back then that they don't seem to have now. And also, in your seminars and different things, you also have a Facebook group where people can ask questions and things like that. But what are theological principles and moral principles that people are not using, care about in this day and age? And do you believe that a marriage is not, you know, based on God, with God, on God, is that the reason that marriages are not working? Or is there another reason?
Well,
money is one. I know that. Money is one of the biggest reasons, and I'd like to talk about that later on.
Okay. Well, yeah. Life has changed. I don't know that it needed to change or had to change, but certain things in life today has changed from what it used to be. And as I said before, people get anxious. Bible says be anxious for nothing, which means we should take our time. But people get anxious and they want to get, you know, to things. And so a lot of times in order to do that, they jump over some hurdles. And the hurdles are there for a reason. But they want to jump over and jump into a relationship. And they haven't examined things like you mentioned, the finance. They haven't examined whether this person has a philosophy that's different from their philosophy. You have some people who care nothing about bills. They'll make bills all over the place. They don't care about them. They don't plan to pay them anyway, you know. So you need to be able to check and see what is a person's philosophy about responsibility of making bills. And you have other people who don't want to spend any money, who don't want to do – I mean, they just hoard. And so, you know, you put a spendthrift with somebody who's just a miser, you know, or a person who just has no regard for responsibility, and you're going to have some problems. Philosophically, you're going to have some problems. So – I don't know if I answered your question quite
yes,
the way that you want. Okay. All right.
Yes, you
good.
Did. Okay. Okay, we've covered internet dating. So when you give marriage counseling, when you're in session, what do you yourself look for? And also, do you actually verbally tell a couple if they're suitable for each other in marriage or not?
Well, that's a great question. As a counselor, well, first of all, I don't marry people unless I've taken them through a course of study, you know, marriage counseling sessions. I have anywhere from 6 to 8 sessions with a couple. After the first couple of sessions, I can pretty much tell some of the things that they're going to have difficulties with. I have questionnaires that I have them fill out, and by their responses, I can see where there are some potholes in the fabric. I try then to take the sessions in stride according to what those responses are on those questionnaires, and as I begin to talk with them, I see patterns. And so then as a counselor, I begin to point out, well, are you sure that, or do you know that this person believes thus and so, thus and so? And then the other person responds, well, I didn't realize that, or whatever it is. And so I try to, you know, try to nudge them into understanding each other's philosophical base. Yes, if I see that this is a no-go, yes, I am going to say, well, I really don't see your relationship at this time being where it needs to be. Maybe some more maturity is needed, some time is needed, and perhaps you ought to think about it. I remember one session I had with a couple, and the man expressed that he was not a Christian, that he just was not there. The lady, she was shocked because all this time she thought that he was a Christian. She said that her life was such that she had sold out to Jesus Christ, and she wanted a companion with that same determination. And she was shocked. She was devastated. So she said, "Listen, I'm calling this thing off because I understand from my background that that's not going to work, a believer and a non-believer, and we know that that's the case. I'm not going there. I love you, but I'm just not willing to take that chance." And so the young man indicated that he was willing to take some instruction. He said, I don't know anything about this. I haven't been brought up in the church. I don't have that background, but I'm willing to learn." And so that's that part of the session. Well, as time went on, he called and he wanted further instruction. He said, I really want to know, what is this thing? And so then it came about that after a certain period of learning and growing, that she said, "Well, now I will marry you," because he accepted Christ in his life as his personal Savior. And that's been a number of years ago, and as far as I'm not really, associated with them. They weren't members of our church, but a couple of years ago, I found out they were still married and doing well. But, yeah, I have to, as a counselor, feel comfortable, especially if they're asking me to perform the marriage ceremony. I have to feel comfortable that they're on the same plate. Their goals and aspirations are in the same mode. Otherwise, I would just be officiating at what I know is going to be a train wreck later on.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask. I didn't mean to cut you off like that, but
it's okay.
With Christians and people who don't understand Christianity, what happens if a person is not of the same faith? Like, let's say one's Pentecostal, one's Jewish, Catholic, Baptist. I mean, do you believe that somebody denomination affects the marriage?
Yeah, I think very much so. The Bible talks about not being equally yoked. And but it's really talking about a believer and an unbeliever. I would say that the easiest road to take is that you're on the same road spiritually. Now I don't. If we talk about can a Baptist marry a Methodist or something like that? Sure, that's not a particular problem. They can work that out, and hopefully that they become, one or the other. Because I do believe that husbands and wives are better off when they worship together, especially if they're young and worshiping together, and then they're going to have children. I think all that they can do that will not mix the children up, I think, is prudent. However, we're not talking, I don't think that somebody of the Muslim faith and somebody of the Christian faith are going to have an easy road in a marriage relationship. I think that that's going. They're going to have to. I just think it should not exist because they're on two different planes. They're on two different ways of thinking, and it's going to cause some spiritual disaster down the road.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the more alike that we are, I think the easier the territory. But that's not to rule out just, you know, one Christian going to one church across the street and, you know, from another Christian across the street. If they're Christians and they're Christians, that's fine. But they need to work out the differences so that they understand each other and they're not fighting each other.
Okay, they need to understand each other that they're not fighting each other. Okay, that makes plenty of sense to me. A whole lot of sense. Now, you wrote 10 books. You're the author of 10 books. And
well,
in one of your books, Falling Back in Love, text, I know it's at least 10. I'm fairly certain. You talk about how they married for 37 years. And you met some of the people that you counseled, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What did they, even though they were different, each couple was, what did you look for in each of them before they married? Because these people that you were talking about married for 37, 40 years. So what is holding that together? Is it their faith, that they both have faith? Or, and also, do you believe that, let's say one person smokes cigarettes, the other one doesn't smoke cigarettes, would that affect their marriage? Things, little things like that, you know, would they be considered unequally yoked or compatible? Like if one drinks alcohol and the other one drinks alcohol, do you believe a marriage like that can make it?
Okay, that's kind of a wide question that you asked me. Let me see if I can break
okay.
it down. I think the things that are more similar in individuals are things that help us blend better, the more similar we are. I think that things that are way out and distractive in their approach tend to make life less comfortable. You mentioned smoking. All right, let's say that one smokes and the other has never smoked or never been in that environment. I think that's going to be disruptive. I don't tell people, well, you can't marry that person. I mean, if you love them and you're willing to go through the sacrifice and they're willing to be sensitive to your situation, I think that, you know, eventually it can work. I don't think anybody who's smoking is a health risk. I mean, you don't have to be, that doesn't even have to be a religious thing. I mean, that just doctors will tell you that, researchers will tell you that you're putting a foreign substance into your system that's not going to be conducive to good health. But you also have to realize that if a non-smoker marries, or rather if a smoker marries a non-smoker, they also put that non-smoker into a perilous position as well. It's not just their health, but now they're affecting the health of that spouse that does not smoke, you know, all the research on secondhand smoke and all of that. And then you if you bring children into that relationship, they are affected by the smoker. Now, I've heard of people and known people who, when they get ready to smoke, they go outside of the house and they smoke outside. They don't, you know,
okay.
bring it inside. That's a compliance. That's an attempt, but still, you know, it's a hazard to their health. And I'm not sure that it's
secondhand smoke.
Yeah, I'm not sure that it does not have an effect, even if they don't smoke in the presence of people. Now, let me say I'm prejudiced in this regard. I've never smoked in my life, okay? Never smoked. My wife has never smoked. So I'm very sensitive when I'm talking to people and they are ardent smokers, you know, even though they're not smoking in my presence, if I'm in close quarters with them, I'm probably going to get a hint of the fact that they are a smoker. Do I condemn these people? No. But I know that it's not comfortable for me because I'm a non-smoker. I'm not used to that kind of environment.
Okay.
So I think that, you know, that's something that, you know, it's something that should be considered. Are you going to see you lay down on a pillow next to that person all night? Now they're a smoker and you're not a smoker. You know, some carryover is going to happen in that environment. Are you willing to do that? You know, well, some people are, and then some people aren't. So you have to know ahead of time what is
okay.
going to be accepted by
all
you.
Right. Okay, that makes plenty of sense. Everything you just said makes a whole lot of sense.
I'm glad.
A whole lot of sense. Now, I have another question. In today's age, 2015, it's a new time era. But in your opinion, is this a troubling time? I mean, are there more pressures now than, let's say, 10, 15 years ago on marriages and relationships?
Well, I think society's always placed pressure on relationships. And yes, I think that today there are more pressures. People have less inhibitions about things, and so more things are allowed. More things are allowed to enter into the relationship. So, yeah, I think there are stressors. I think you mentioned earlier finances, and finance is one of the probably in the top three killers of marriage relationships because you know the pressures of finances. A couple needs to sit down before they get married and figure out how are we gonna handle our finances. Are we gonna have a joint account? Are we going to have separate accounts? How are we going to, you know, are we going to pay out our bills out of the joint account or the separate account? What is our philosophical base of managing our finances? Are we going to be savers? Are we going to be spenders? You know, what are we going to do? So I think yes, those kind of pressures are very prevalent today, and. You know, somebody's guys are going to develop a pile of money. They're going to make a pile of money, and then that money goes. Does the relationship have to go? You know, do we have to get a divorce because we lost everything? You know, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? What is our commitment toward each other? I think it's important.
Okay, all right. That makes plenty of sense, everything you said did. What about prenuptials? If a man wants a woman to sign a prenuptial, let's say saying she agrees to leave the marriage with what she bought in, or something ridiculous like you can't gain over 10 or 15 pounds, or the woman has a prenuptial saying, well, if you cheat on me, you leave the marriage with what you came in with, and I keep all mine. What do you think about prenuptial? What is your honest opinion?
I think prenuptials are just a thing. But the real prenup is I intend to marry you with everything that is within me. I accept you on those same terms. There is nothing that I expect you to withhold from me and me to withhold from you. You see, prenups are just that, you know. I mean, they work for some people. They don't work for a whole lot of people. I think that my suggestion is, first of all, and I come from the standpoint of a pastor. I think that our first allegiance ought to be to God. A genuine commitment to Christ, I think, is the is the ultimate prenup, you know, for folks. And then out of that, the understanding that I will be answerable to God for what I do, for my behavior. I, because I love Christ and because I love you under my relationship with Christ, I will not cheat on you. I'm taking you as my spouse for life, not for the moment, for life. I'm sold out in that regard. And both people making that declaration and standing on those principles, I don't think that a prenup is you know, would displace that. I really don't care so much about what you write down as a legal document. The legal document to me is that we have a relationship with the Lord, and because of our relationship, we are going to be committed to working this thing out. You know, I think prenups are kind of a preset disaster to happen. You know, if I don't trust you, I don't, you know, you writing down on paper that I'm going to be responsible and that doesn't mean, it's got to be written in your heart. You know, writing it down on paper is okay for the court system, I suppose. You said, well, this rascal wrote this thing down, Judge, on December the 1st, and I'm holding him to it. All my money are, well, you know, the rascal is going to be a rascal. You didn't trust him in the beginning, so that's why you ask him to write it down. So, to me, that's a waste of time. If I don't trust you, I don't trust you.
All right. Okay, if I don't trust you, I don't trust you. So if a woman is dating a man and she knows that his ex-girlfriend may be at a club party, even the church, and she says, don't you talk to her, and she gives him conditions, does that a sign that she doesn't trust him? Is that what that would be perceived as by the man?
Now, are you saying that she... that
she gave him instructions to her boyfriend. When you go out, wherever you're going, church, club, bar, even a concert, I don't want you talking to your ex-girlfriend. Is that saying I don't trust you to the man?
I don't know what that's saying, but I don't really know how to answer that.
Okay, all right. Okay.
Because I think that if she is that specific, that indicates that there is some doubt there. You know, I mean, he should not be having intimate conversations with his ex. That's why she's your ex, you know. But on the same tone, if the person who he's now engaged with or in dating is saying, I don't want you to talk to her, there must be some reason for that. She's doubting. She somehow she feels threatened. And the old adage, where there's smoke, there's probably fire. So I would question that. I would question, why is she coming up with that specifically? And then if he had five exes down the line, is she also putting them all on a don't talk to them? You know, don't have an association? I don't know.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. So what is the success for your marriage? I mean, you've got this cyber counseling ministry through Facebook. Then you have the www.soundmarriage.com website where you said people can get relationship and counsel anonymously. So what is the success of your marriage? I mean, you've been married 53 years. People today get divorced sometimes within a year, before a year is up. Sometimes some get divorced before that. So what has made your marriage a success?
Okay. First of all, I have to say that I got saved. I got my life together, and I put it in the hands of God. And I said to the Lord, Lord, I really need for you to show me the person that you want me to marry. And so I was looking, and I went down some wrong roads. When I say wrong roads, it was just the wrong person. And I appreciated them and all that, but they just did not spark that interest that I wanted to spend my life with them. Good people, but just not the person that I was praying for. Well, on the same tone, I learned later that my wife had a similar prayer, asking the Lord to guide her to the person that would do her good for all of her life. And so when we met each other, there was that spark, there was that interest, there was that wow factor. And I was so amazed, but when God moves, it is amazing, you know. And so we fell in love, and we began to look at the things that we talk about, the things that we both wanted. We started discussing the direction that we felt the Lord was taking us in our lives. We agreed, and when we said, I do, well, actually, I think the truth is before we said I do, but at that point, we were committed. We said for life, we will serve the Lord. We will serve each other. We will commit ourselves. See, I committed myself. She committed herself. Yes, there are some times when, you know, you don't see eye to eye on some things, but that is not, that has nothing to do with our commitment. Our commitment is our commitment. I come from the era that just left that thing of your word is your bond. It's still stuck. We still stuck. The Lord put us together. I'm convinced of that. 53 years later, I'm convinced that it wasn't our doing, it was the Lord. We were true, or have been true partners with each other. I don't do things without my partner. We travel together. We walk together. We talk together. I guess we make some people sick because, you know, we are together on most things. And I feel like there's a part of me missing when I have to do something without her. I loved her then, and my love has increased, and I just can't get enough of Dorothy Stevens, because that's my
okay. Okay. All right. So one of my last questions, because we've got about 10 minutes left. Well, 11 minutes. When a person has been divorced, let's say one time, and they're looking to remarry, they're looking for somebody that's compatible with them. The person who has never been divorced, do you think they're equally yoked? I mean, if one is divorced, the other one has never even been married or divorced, is that a sign maybe that person may be wrong for a person? I mean, you know, if one, and does it matter in your opinion? I understand you're a pastor, but in your opinion, does it matter who filed for the divorce? Things like that, are those things that people should look for? If somebody's been divorced, I said one time, now I'm saying two times. Is there something someone should consider before marrying? Because, well, that's just my question.
Okay, so if I understand what you're asking, is a person who has been divorced either one or multiple times and is looking to marry somebody who's never been divorced, can that be a factor that we call unequally yoked?
Yes.
That's your question, right? Okay, I don't know that that is the actual reason that we could say it's unequally yoked. It could be. A lot depends on it. A lot depends on what the divorce was about. A lot depends on where we are now in relationship to where we were when that particular occurrence happened. There are people who have made mistakes, and they really made wrong judgments, and they got it together after that. They realized their mistake, they owned up to it, they repented, whatever they needed to do, and now they're on a wrong, I mean, they're on a different path, not a wrong path, but on a different path with a different commitment to not go back to those things that they once did. Okay, so that person has a new eligibility, let's hope, that they are now, they've come back from the brink of disaster, and now they're making right decisions. So they come into a relationship with somebody who's never had that experience at all. They've never even been married. I think through counseling, that couple can be prepared to have a successful marriage. Yes, it's a little skatey there for a minute, but I think with proper instruction and a willingness to learn, they can make it. I like for people to hang around with me who have made mistakes, but who now honestly want to correct those mistakes. I think I can help.
That makes a lot of sense. All of that does. Yes, it does. All right. So you have 10 books out, and you have the soundmarriage.com website. Is that where people would go to get in touch with you, or should they go to Facebook? If someone wants to send you an email, what would they send the email to?
Okay, well, they would send it to this email. But let me correct something. I counted it up, and it's 8 books. It's not 10.
Okay.
I guess what you're saying is prophecy, so I owe 2 more books, at least 2 more books. But it's 8 books.
Okay.
All
right.
Okay. The address that you would send your questions to or your responses to is ccenter, C-O-G, at gmail.com. That's C as in Charlie, center, 22, COG, at gmail.com.
Oh, okay. Right. I was looking at your book, Falling Back in Love. Beautiful book. What I've been reading, beautiful. And
thank
how
you.
To start the fire again. Yeah, I've never been married. So, anyway.
Okay. I'd like to say to those people who want to be married and have not been married, you need to be concerned about where you're fishing. Fish in good waters. I like to tell people, you know, one of the best fishing streams is in the church, believe it or not. Finding people of like mind. You talked about being unequally yoked. I think if you're learning and growing at the same thing, you are helping yourself better. So that's where you need to be fishing.
Okay. With fishing for people that you have something in common. Okay. Well, that makes good sense. Okay. Is there anything else you would like to say, Dr. Stevens? Got five and a half minutes.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. That's dangerous to a preacher. But I am so glad for this opportunity that you've given to us. And sorry that Mrs. Stevens didn't feel up to speaking, but she's been a part here. She writes me notes and gives me a heads up on things here. So we're still together, even though I'm not.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's beautiful. Tell Ms. Stevens I said hello. This is Angela.
Oh. Hello. Okay, she's waving and saying hello back.
Okay. Okay, I asked a lot of questions.
Well, I hope that I've been helpful in my answer.
Thank you. Thank you both. And Ms. Dorothy Stevens, thank you also, again, personally.
You're quite welcome.
You're welcome, too. All right, I guess that's going to pretty much end the show. Ms. Dorothy Stevens, is there anything you'd like to say? I know your husband said you weren't feeling too good. Is there anything you'd like to say? Got about 4 minutes.
I'd just like to say that I believe that God had you get us involved, and I hope that people who heard and that their lives will be different, and if they have any questions, to make sure to ask questions on the email. Okay?
Okay. All right, then. All right, everyone, you heard Ms. Stevens. Just ask the questions on the email, and her husband is a marriage counselor. So I believe that, I don't know, are you just a marriage counselor, or are there other things that you do?
Well, that's kind of a full-time job.
Okay, full-time job.
And, you know, we do lectures and seminars around the country. I write books. I guess my time is pretty well called for. Oh, you know, there is a phone number I can give you too, give your audience too. It's area code 215-LIVRITE, Live Right, or that's 215-548-7483. And that's a number to my office, and if you contact my secretary, she will put you in touch with me, and we will try to answer any questions or any concerns that you have that we might be helpful for you. So thank you again for your kindness and inviting us to be a part of your program.
You're more than welcome. I hope you and she will come back, or either one of you. Because I'm doing this show to help not only myself, but other people as well. So thank you both.
All right.
All right, you have a good night.
All right, you also, and God bless.
God bless you, too. God bless you, Ms. Dorothy.
Thank you. I received that. Thank you.
Okay, you received that. All right. Well, that's good. All right. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, everyone. You've been listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. That was Reverend and Dr. Stephen and his wife, Ms. Dorothy Stevens. They are a married couple. They've been married for 53 years. He was on the show talking about relationships and marriages. I hope to have him back. You know, so I hope this helps someone, because I learned something too. So everyone, look forward to another time with Show Talk with Angela Butler. Thank you. Good night.